Good morning, New Mexico. Welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting from the Santa Fe Baking Company, streaming on the web at KSFR.org, and podcasting at SantaFeRadioCafe.org, thanks to Dotfoil Computer Services. And we're at Facebook.com/Radio Cafe. I'm very happy now to welcome Dr. David Carpenter. He's the director of the Institute for Health and the Environment at the University at Albany. And John McPhee is with us. He's a safety expert for policy and programs. He's with the Santa Fe Alliance for Public Health and Safety. Welcome, gentlemen, to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mary.
So we're talking today because Santa Fe is in the process of revising its telecommunications ordinance, and there's a lot that we need to learn about the realities of radiation and its potential dangers. And some people who are looking at this issue, and one of the reasons I haven't really covered it much on this show before is because people conflate cell phone use, cell phone towers, Wi-Fi, electric power lines, and all sorts of things as if they were the same things and posed the same dangers. And I thought maybe today we could sort some of these things out. So I thought maybe we should start with cell phones. And Dr. Carpenter, tell us, what do the studies that we have so far, and there are several dozen of them, show about the dangers or non-dangers of cell phones, the relationship between cell phone use and specific diseases?
Well, I should say first that no studies in the U.S. have reported any hazardous effect. But that probably is due to the fact that we haven't used cell phones all that long in the U.S. They were first discovered in Northern Europe, and they've been used much longer there. The studies from Northern Europe, and again, it's not that we know exactly what the degree of risk is, but the evidence is getting to be very strong that people that use a cell phone for 10 years or more are at much greater risk of developing a brain tumor, but only on the side of the head where they've used the cell phone. It's not just brain tumors. There are also increases in cancer of the auditory nerve. That's not a malignant cancer, but if it grows inside your skull, it can cause all kinds of problems. And studies from Israel are showing elevated tumors of the salivary gland that's in the cheek. And all of these are only on the side of the head where the cell phone is used. So the other side becomes a control, if you will. Now, the really frightening thing, which was just published a few months ago from Sweden, is that when the investigators looked at people under the age of 20 when they started to use a cell phone, which, of course, in our society, every kid under the age of 20 is on the cell phone all the time, but those persons are at 5 times greater risk than if they're an adult when they begin to use a cell phone. Again, I should emphasize it's one study, but the results are pretty convincing, and they certainly raise a lot of red flags.
So you actually have the incidence of 25-year-old Swedish adults with brain tumors on the side of their head that they use their cell phone at a higher rate than normal?
That is correct. It's in that study, they looked at people under 20, people between 20 and 30, and people older than that. And the younger the age at which one began to use the cell phone, the higher the risk of developing the brain tumor. Now, you know, I should certainly say that brain tumors are not that common in our society, but our concern is that if this is a real risk, and all of the evidence points to the fact that it is, although I would certainly agree it's not proven beyond a shadow of a doubt, but if this is a real risk, we may be facing an epidemic of brain tumors in the future, especially in young people that are using cell phones without any indication that they should be cautious about it.
Yes, at this point, I'd like to interject the fact that the Kaiser Family Foundation just released a study just 2 weeks ago that indicates that not only are cell phones an issue, but the behavior, as Dr. Carpenter is referring to, the risk among young people. The Kaiser Family Foundation determined that in this country, United States, 12 to 18-year-olds, 70% owned a cell phone, and they're using them at an average of 53 hours per week, which was a shock, really, to the entire scientific community. And they are also engaged in multiple use of wireless with different devices simultaneously in addition to that.
Now, 53 hours a week, that's like a full-time job with 13 hours of overtime just simply talking on the phone?
Yes, exactly. The saving grace, of course, is the new fad is texting, thank heaven, because what that means is away from the head. It's exposing the arms but not exposing the brain. And in actuality, I'm telling parents, obviously we don't want kids texting and driving. But in fact, texting is far safer than talking on the phone next to the head.
Yes, that's absolutely right. And there are a whole variety of things that can be done that would allow one to use your cell phone and use it without increasing risk of exposure to your brain. A wired headset will give absolutely no exposure to the brain unless you put the cell phone in your pocket or someplace else on your body. I was actually told that some women keep their cell phone in their bra, which sounds mighty uncomfortable to me. But wherever your cell phone is, it is receiving the radiation from the cell tower. And so if you're that's close to your body, that's a problem. If you use a Bluetooth, for example, you get much lower exposure to the brain. You still get some, but the Bluetooth is communicating with your cell phone. So again, the question is the cell phone being worn in your pocket or on your body somewhere, in which case you're simply exposing a different part of your body. There's not been specific study of cancers from people wearing their cell phone in their pocket, but I see no reason to expect that that wouldn't also increase the risk of prostate, GI cancers, things like that.
I have heard from multiple people who are not scientists, and it has the feeling of rumor that if you use a wired headset that simply conducts the radiation into your ear. Can you put that to rest?
That is absolutely false. There's a wired headset will give no radiation to the head, none whatsoever. It's exactly the same as a landline. Now, of course, using landlines, it gives absolutely no radiation, and that's something that individuals should do when they can. I certainly have a cell phone and use it on occasion, but I make a point of not using a cell phone when I can use a landline because there's no exposure from a landline.
How far away from the body does the cell phone have to be in order to avoid the risks that we're talking about?
Doesn't have to be very far away. And, you know, some people are actually thinking that what they need to do is build a little device on a cell phone that would keep it an inch or two away from the ear, perhaps jack up the volume. Because this radio frequency radiation falls off very quickly with distance. But if you hold it right up against your ear, the ear canal becomes a little tunnel through which the radiation penetrates into your brain.
I just received a copy of the letter that Dr. George Carlo wrote to the legislature in Maine when they were considering the legislation for a warning label on cell phones. He is of the opinion that the safety standard that was utilized to approve cell phones originally in 1984 was simply... all they did was transpose the figures they had from studying microwave ovens, and that in fact, if they had used the studies he was paid to do, I guess he did about 50 studies with $28 million from the industry, in fact, cell phones would have never been permitted on the market.
Well, I don't know the details of his report, although I was also at that hearing in Maine and also wrote a letter there. I think it's very clear that the standards for exposure from cell phones are not adequate. I get calls and emails all the time from people whose ear gets hot when they're using their cell phone. It is microwaves that this radio frequency radiation. And the standards for safety are supposed to be set so that there's no tissue heating. Now, even that is inadequate because we know from any number of biological studies that there are adverse effects of radio frequency radiation at intensities that are much below those that cause tissue heating. But the standards in cell phones are not adequate at all.
There's another thing that I think is very important to distinguish. When people say microwaves, they mean two different things. One is a very specific frequency that is used for microwave ovens that heats water, and the other is a range of frequencies that are called microwaves, most of which don't heat water except for this one frequency. Can you open that up for us?
Well, it's not really true that the others don't heat water. Let me go back and describe the electromagnetic spectrum, because I'm sure we'll come to that sooner rather than later. The electromagnetic spectrum is like visible light. You have packages of energy. They have a wavelength, but they have no mass. So everybody sees the colors of the rainbow in invisible light. Now, if you go above that energy level, you get into infrared you get into ultraviolet radiation, which we know can cause cancer. And then at even higher levels, you have X-rays and gamma rays and cosmic rays. And this part of the electromagnetic spectrum has enough energy to directly break DNA, cause mutation, cause cancer, and a whole variety of diseases. Now, below the infrared region of the spectrum, that's what heats the Earth, and obviously life on Earth wouldn't be possible unless Earth were heated. Then you have this long spectrum that's called the microwave region, or the radio frequency region. And that's because this is the portion of the electromagnetic spectrum that's used for communications. It's AM radio, FM radio, radar, cell towers, and there's a range of different frequencies, including those that drive your microwave oven. But there's enough energy in all of that spectrum so that you can get tissue heating if the intensity is high enough. Then at the very low end of the spectrum, you have the electric and magnetic fields that come from electricity use. These are the power line fields, and they're traditionally separated as electric fields and magnetic fields. And in fact, my first involvement in this area was focused on study of adverse effects of those very low energy fields, where there's a lot of evidence that children exposed to magnetic fields from power lines increase the risk of their developing leukemia. Now, that's still a controversial subject for two reasons. One is we don't know a single mechanism that could explain how cancer could come from a part of the electromagnetic spectrum that's much lower than that of the visible light, which obviously we depend on. Secondly, there's inadequate evidence that those magnetic fields can produce cancer in animals. My personal view is that neither of those is a reason to discount the very strong evidence that those fields do increase the risk of cancer in humans.
Well, and I think it's important to point this out, even though it's obvious, you have to look at the phenomena before you figure out what the mechanism is.
That's absolutely correct. And you have to judge the strength of the relationship. And what we see at this full range, from the lower energy to the radio frequency, is that study after study is showing increases in risk of cancer that are in the range of 2 to 4-fold, sometimes a little higher. Now, I don't mean to say that every study has shown a significant elevation, but when one looks at the literature that we have and tries to evaluate the merits of each, which varies on how many cases you have, the size of the sample, how good the exposure assessment is, all of those factors, then I at least conclude that the evidence that there is a relationship with brain cancer, with leukemia, with acoustic neuroma, with parotid gland tumors is very strong.
We're talking to Dr. David Carpenter, the director of the Institute for Health and the Environment at the University at Albany, and John McPhee with the Santa Fe Alliance for Public Health and Safety. So let's back up just a moment before we get back to cell phones and cell phone towers and so on, and talk about ionizing radiation. What is non-ionizing radiation is what cell phones and all these other things are. What is ionizing radiation in the sense of what is happening, what is being ionized?
Well, what's being ionized in most cases is water. But what's being ionized that poses real problems is DNA. And that's how mutations are formed. But the issue is that the distinction is not all that clear, because we know that these radio frequency radiations also generate reactive oxygen species, or free radicals. So ionizing radiation can be either particles, that's like alpha particles, gamma particles, beta particles, neutrons, protons. I shouldn't have said gamma because that's a part of the electromagnetic spectrum. But these are components of nuclei that go charging off in space. When they hit your body, they cause damage. Now, as I said a moment ago, the highest energy part of the electromagnetic spectrum, where there is no mass, it's just a packet of energy. But there's enough energy so that those X-rays and cosmic rays and gamma rays can actually cause direct damage of DNA and of water.
Now, talk for a moment about the body's immune system in combating this kind of damage.
Well, the immune system is extremely important. And our immune system has the ability to detect abnormal things. And when it detects an abnormal thing, it usually goes at it and kills it. I think it's common knowledge that all of us have little cancers forming in our body every day. And that these are results of ionization or chemical reactions or some other damaging event. But in most circumstances, the immune system detects that abnormal cell and they destroy it. When the immune system is not functioning well, then that little cancer that forms can continue to grow. This is one reason why people with HIV infections often develop cancers and unusual kinds of cancers, because their immune system is not effective in nipping the little cancer in the bud.
Well, one thing is when your immune system isn't functioning well, and the other is when the amount of damaging input coming in from the outside, chemical input or radiation or whatever, is greater than your immune system can handle.
That's correct. It's possible to overwhelm the immune system with a variety of exposures, whether chemical or radio frequency radiation or ionizing radiation.
So I don't know if this is correct. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think of it sort of as a kind of a military metaphor, which is you've got all these defenses, and you have little invaders every day, and they are put down, surrounded, killed, whatever. But if you've got too many invaders, you're in trouble.
That's a perfect analogy, because that's exactly what happens. So if one has too many of these little cancers that are forming, one or two of them are going to escape the immune system surveillance.
So let's go back to radiation that comes from cell phones and the damage that it causes. We've had TV and radio waves going through our houses and through our bodies for decades, and I don't think anyone has gotten sick from it, have they?
Well, yes, they have. And that it's interesting, because now there are two groups, one in Korea and one in Rome, actually from Vatican Radio, that are showing that children that live near very high-powered AM radio transmission towers are at much greater risk of developing leukemia. Now, this is interesting, because I mentioned earlier that the cancer that seems to result in children exposed to the lower energy power line fields is leukemia primarily. Brain cancer a little bit, but the evidence is much stronger for leukemia. So while there have only been maybe five really high-quality studies of children living around these AM transmission towers, they're pretty consistent in showing a significant elevation in leukemia. So my working hypothesis here is that if you're exposed to radio frequency or microwave radiation over your whole body, the cancer you need to be most concerned about is leukemia. If you're exposed to a localized part of your body, like your head and ear and cheek, then the cancers that are elevated are those that occur in those parts of the body that are near the exposure. Now, that, of course, has implications, as I discussed a little bit earlier. If you carry your cell phone in your pocket, then you're exposing your pelvis. And I would predict that at some point, people will find elevated things like prostate cancer in men that wear their cell phones on their belt all day with it on. Nobody's done those studies yet.
The example that you just gave was people living near transmission towers. And, of course, that's a very high level of power that they're living near. We're not as worried about people who are just receiving TV and radio signals in their houses but aren't living near the sources of those signals.
Well, yes and no. The studies that have been done in Scandinavia were by these high-voltage lines that demonstrated elevated leukemia. But most of the studies that have been done in the U.S. were not just those people living by high-voltage lines. They were people living in homes or working in occupations where the amount of current flowing through the electrical system was very high. The current is proportional to the magnetic field that's generated. So there have been several major studies done in the Denver, Colorado area, and the facts that were important was the neighborhood power line, how close it was to the house, where the house was in the distribution system. So when you have a distribution system, it's like water in a pipe. At the beginning of the distribution system, there's a lot of current flowing through the line. As you go farther and farther away, the current is lower and lower. So the evidence was really that there was elevated cancer in those children exposed to high magnetic fields just from power lines. There have been other studies from California that looked at children using appliances and things like hair dryers and electric blankets. Children that used those regularly had a higher risk of developing leukemia. And even though you don't use those appliances for longer periods of time, they generate very high currents. And so that is consistent with the fact that it's the total magnetic field that's important.
When you look at this whole situation, I mean, we're at a very interesting moment, which is that cell phones have been in widespread use for maybe 10 years here in the United States, for longer in Scandinavia, and unlike, for example, tobacco, which you can really give up without without giving up anything except for an addiction, giving up cell phones is a lot harder because for so many people they are a tool of your work. I mean, kids who talk on them for 53 hours a week is another issue, but for example, people whose work is mobile, like realtors and people who are in the field, find them absolutely indispensable. So we have, if this is potentially a real public health crisis, I'm wondering, in terms of past public health crises, what you would compare it to?
Well, neither brain cancer nor leukemia is nearly as common as lung cancer has been. And I don't mean to blow this up beyond, what it should be based on the evidence. But there's nothing more devastating than brain cancer, and especially in young people. This recent hearing in Maine where the question was, should warnings be put on cell phones to not to stop using them, but to be aware of how you could use them more safely. But at that hearing, there were several people who either had a brain tumor or wives and children of people that had just died of brain tumors. It is a tragic thing, and it gets people at the prime of life. So the issue is important. But I think the other thing is certainly we're not going to go back to a pre-wireless age. I actually saw a television show last evening on Africa and how the fact that there aren't any landlines there and the cell phones have made an enormous difference in these isolated rural areas. But by knowing how you can use a cell phone more safely, it's possible to enjoy the benefits of them, but not get at a very high elevated risk for developing brain tumors and other diseases.
What, for example, can people do? I mean, obviously, you've got to carry the thing around on your body if you're going to be walking around the city and so on. Is there any kind of shield that people can put on them that keep the radiation from going into their bodies?
Well, it's interesting because someone gave me a little mesh that, in fact, is a pretty good shield. Now, the problem is if you stick your cell phone in that shield, you won't hear it ring. I think there's going to be some technology developing where you can have the mesh between your body and the cell phone with a wired earpiece or something like that that will significantly reduce your exposure, but not interfere with your use of a cell phone. I'm not an expert in those technologic aspects, but this is certainly something that I think the industry is going to be motivated to do, because the evidence for hazard is just getting very much stronger on practically a daily basis.
There are alternatives also being discussed that involve fiber optics.
Yes. Fiber optics would not generate any radio frequency field. And, you know, this is an issue with Wi-Fi. Many schools and even cities are going to Wi-Fi environments. Well, if you're in a Wi-Fi environment, you're constantly exposed to radio frequency fields. Now, at a much lower level than if you're holding a cell phone to your head. But like every environmental exposure, we have every reason to suspect that what is critical is one's aggregate total exposure. And therefore, going totally to wireless seems just unreasonable, particularly in a school environment, because it's relatively easy to have a wired internet system in place in schools, and that would not result in exposure. I've been involved in several cases where cell phone towers are being placed on schools or near schools. And that's the same issue. Being close to a cell phone tower does increase your exposure, not by a huge amount. But if you live next door, that's a 24/7 exposure. And while nobody has done the study that shows greater leukemia or brain tumors in people that live next to a cell phone tower, there's every reason to think that aggregate exposure is important.
To add to this discussion in schools, Dr. Carpenter, I would be recommending to teachers and parents that, of course, the children want to have cell phones, and perhaps it is a safety issue in this day and age, but to simply turn them off in class. If 70% of the kids presently have cell phones in junior high school and high school, that if we have 70% of a class of 30, that's over 20 kids with cell phones on in any classroom at any one time in a fairly small area, and as you know, obviously transmitting and receiving from cell towers.
You're absolutely right. That is a significant exposure, and that's totally above and beyond the fact that it's very disruptive to have cell phones going off in class.
The 1996 Telecommunications Act of the United States specifically bars health and safety regulations, or health and safety as issues, from being taken into account as criteria for the placement of cell phone towers and other wireless devices. Dr. Carpenter, what is your involvement in this whole set of questions on a political level? What's going on? How do you see it?
Well, I think that act is just so grossly unconstitutional as to be incredible. It is a reflection of the power of the telecommunications industry and how they've funneled money to Congress to have an act passed that takes away a fundamental right of people to oppose the placement of a cell phone tower on the basis of health effects. There have been repeated attempts to either change the law or have it declared unconstitutional. It's a real problem because this industry has enormous power in the U.S. I think that that act will be changed at some point because it's just the most outrageous. I don't tend to get terribly involved in the political implications. I was someone that testified at the president's cancer panel a year ago in Phoenix. I certainly advocate precaution in placement and use of cell phone towers, of use of cell phones. And I think there's so many things that one can do that aren't disruptive and will significantly reduce your exposure. And I simply fail to understand why there has been resistance to implementing those kinds of precautions. I certainly agree that we don't have every I dotted and T crossed. There have not been studies in the U.S. demonstrating elevated cancer. But the reasons for that are pretty obvious. We haven't used cell phones all that long. And in that regard, it is analogous to the situation with smoking and lung cancer. It's interesting. There's a wonderful book by Deborah Davis that documents that there was definitive evidence in Nazi Germany in the mid-30s that smoking caused lung cancer. It was totally ignored here in the U.S. for two reasons. First of all, it was the nasty Germans. And secondly, the people in the American Medical Association, the National Cancer Institute, most of them were smokers. A number of them had stock in cigarette companies. And, you know, we really blew it. It wasn't until the 60s with the Surgeon General's report that any government advice and action was taken to discourage smoking. And the numbers of people that died because of the failure to take action are many. I don't know exactly how many, but I suspect that smoking kills a lot more people than radiofrequency radiation does. But anyone, especially a young person, that suffers morbidity and mortality from cell phone use is one too many.
We're talking to Dr. David Carpenter. He is the director of the Institute for Health and the Environment at the University of Albany, and John McPhee, Santa Fe, and with the Santa Fe Alliance for Public Health and Safety. Let's go back to the issue of cell phone towers. It's the same frequencies of radiation that you have in cell phones, but the problem with them is that it's 24/7 if you live near them, and it's also a higher power of radiation. Do all cell phone towers emit pretty much the same levels of radiation?
No, they don't. They come in a variety of different powers. And one of the issues is that when a cell tower is constructed, it often operates at a lower power, and then the power level is raised as it gets to be more use for that. But, you know, you're not going to be able to use your cell phone unless there's cell phone towers that your phone can communicate with. The issue, from my judgment, is that towers should be placed as far away from schools and homes and especially daycare centers, places where people are, especially children, as possible. So put them on the mountaintops. Put them away from where people are. You can't use your cell phone if there's not a tower. So I understand the necessity for towers. But what's happening is the industry is giving churches and schools a lot of money to allow them to put a cell phone tower on their building. They want it to be as high as possible so you reach the largest area. But I think most people, when they're approached by the industry, have no concept that this may be increasing the risk of disease.
There is, you mentioned before that cell phone radiation drops off precipitously as you take the phone away from your head. Is there a formula for cell phone towers? How far away does it have to be from human habitation in order to be safe? In other words, in New York City, you're not going to put it on a mountaintop. How close can you put it and still, or do we even have any idea, and still have something resembling public safety?
Well, I think we really can't give any hard, solid information there. Obviously, if you can use your cell phone, you're being bombarded with radio frequency radiation from the cell phone tower. If you can turn on your radio or turn on your television, then you're getting radio frequency radiation from those towers. So what you said earlier, we've been bathed in this for generations. We've never been exposed to the intensity of this radiation that we're currently exposed to. And that's the concern. Now, what level of brain tumor and leukemia is from radio frequency radiation in the past is not clear. But with this massive increase with wireless everything, Wi-Fi everywhere, this does raise some real concerns for the future.
Suppose I go home, I look out my window, and I see there's a cell phone tower on the roof next to my house. Is there anything I can do to protect myself?
Unfortunately, this is what the Federal Communications Act of 1996 prohibits. You can't do anything to protect yourself short of moving. And You know,
so you can't put something around your house. In other words, there's no protective shield that you can put inside.
Well, some of these meshes that people are making may, in fact, reduce exposure. I've been getting some emails, and I don't know that I endorse them, but people that have their houses encased in what looks like aluminum foil, I doubt that that's very effective. But it's interesting that you can object to the cell phone tower on the basis that it's ugly and you don't want it blocking your view, but you can't object to it on the basis of the fact that it may be causing you to be at elevated risk for disease.
Dr. Carpenter, how would you differentiate between cell towers and antennas? The concern we have here in Santa Fe is there, you know, the three different companies are proposing blanket or franchise contracts where they simply determine on their own the locations of antennas, and these antennas are purported to emit 55 to 85 watts, and they want to put them in about every half block.
Well, you know, they all emit the same thing, so it's a problem. We don't know exactly how great the problem is, but it certainly is a problem.
When you say, I mean, he just said 55 to 80, 85 watts, that's less than the light bulb in my kitchen.
Well, again, I'm not the engineer, so antennas are usually receiving rather than giving off. Is that correct? I'm just not familiar with the antennas that you're talking about.
These are the simply, I think they emit and receive, but I'm not exactly sure. I think they're consistent with, and correct me if I'm wrong, the original intent of the telecommunications industry was to provide enough power to so that you could speak on your cell phone on your property outside of your house. But the new intent, of course, is to have enough power so they can penetrate the walls of every home and provide adequate Wi-Fi indoors.
Right. Well, anything that can penetrate the walls of every home is certainly going to have more power than a light bulb.
If you, Dr. Carpenter, were here in Santa Fe advising the citizens and the city council to find some pathway to provide the progress that we seem to demand and public health, which is also of concern, what kind of guidelines and regulations can a city, can a municipality follow to try to keep its citizens safe and healthy?
Well, I think the first thing that there are really two major things that they can do. One is try to place the cell towers as far away from densely populated areas as possible. Now, again, the law makes that difficult and gives the utilities and communications companies an awful lot of leeway. But the other thing that they can do is simply informing the public of the debate. You know, most people think of this as some little far-out thing for which there's almost no evidence, and that really couldn't be further from the truth. Now, there are some other postulated health effects for which the evidence is not so strong. There's a building body of evidence showing neurobehavioral effects in kids in schools if they're exposed to radiofrequency radiation. And there are a number of people that report that they are electrosensitive, which is to say they get headaches and their memory function doesn't work so well when they're in these fields. Neither of those is nearly so well documented as this relationship to cancer. But for many reasons, there's every indication that excessive exposure to these fields is not good for you. And so there are ways to reduce your exposure. The ones we've already talked about, use a wired headset, use a landline when you can. Keep your cell phone a little bit away from your body. Maybe a little device that would hold your cell phone 2 inches away from the head would solve the problem. Use a Bluetooth, but don't put the cell phone in your pocket. All of these things. Don't put wireless in every school. Use landlines. All of these things can make a major difference. Now, I'm not advocating such rigid regulation or huge expense, because there's still a lot that's not known. But one thing we have learned over time is that we get pretty good indication of health hazards at points in time long before we have absolute proof of the mechanism and the magnitude of the risk. And a case like this, because our ability to determine how exposed someone is so inadequate, it's likely that we're underestimating the risk. For example, if I asked you how many hours a week you spent on a cell phone 10 years ago, I certainly wouldn't be able to answer. I guess I would, actually. I didn't have a cell phone 10 years ago. But most people that had one wouldn't be able to accurately give you any indication of how many hours a day they spent on it. So there have not been studies where it's been possible to access the utility's information on use, on how many hours per week someone used their cell phone. That would increase our confidence in the results enormously if we're able to get that information.
It also seems to me that from the point of view of parents, I think a lot of people want to be able to keep track of their kids, which nobody seemed to want to do when I was young, but now they do, and also provide a backup in case of emergency. But it does seem to me that there are options to give their kids cell phones that do not have unlimited plans, for example.
Well, I totally agree with that. It makes every parent feel much more secure if their kid can call them when they have an emergency. And I have no problem with children having cell phones, but I have a problem if they're used except in emergencies, because the child's brain is so much more vulnerable than an adult's brain. And that's just foolish, and parents need to understand that. It doesn't mean the kid can't have a cell phone, but it should mean that the kid is instructed not to use the cell phone except in an emergency and whenever possible to use a landline.
And Dr. Carpenter, what we're doing now, again, with parents, not only telling the parents and the teachers that cell phones should be off in the classroom, but have the child put the cell phone in their backpack, in their lunchbox.
Yeah.
For us as adults, put it in the briefcase, put it in the purse. Just put it anywhere but on the body.
Exactly. And that doesn't in any way reduce one's ability to use it as needed.
In the European Union, there are very different regulations around chemicals than here. Chemicals have to actually be shown to be safe before they can be put on the market. Here, they have to be shown to be poisonous before they can be taken off. Is there any similar set of actions or regulations in other countries that you know of around cell phones or other types of devices?
Well, yes. The country of France has probably got the most stringent regulations. And almost every country in Europe is discussing these issues and making recommendations. The World Health Organization is reconsidering some of their statements from the past. I don't know that any country has really implemented very stringent regulations because, we don't really know what level is safe, if there is any level that's truly safe. What we do know is that the standards that the international agencies have set up, including the Federal Communications Commission, are not safe. And this is a big problem. And in my judgment, the reason that this is such a problem is that most of these committees are dominated by physicists and engineers, not by medical people. And, physicists and engineers don't know diddly squat about human health. They have this idea that the amount of energy in radio frequency waves is too small to cause direct DNA damage, and therefore it can't possibly do anything. Well, if that flies in the face of all of the evidence that we have, why do we set these committees up dominated by people that have no basis for making any judgment whatsoever on health effects? This is true with the FCC. It's primarily an engineering-based organization. The IEEE, which is an independent, I don't remember what the IEEE stands for, except two of the E's are electrical engineers. This is the organization that basically sets the standards for the U.S. And there's almost nobody that has any knowledge of health on these committees. So we've got some major problems.
Yeah. John McPhee, Santa Fe has put off making any major decisions on this because we are looking for more information, partly of the kind that Dr. Carpenter is talking about. There is a town hall meeting coming up?
Yes, there's actually two town hall meetings, one on April 8th from 7 o'clock to 9 o'clock at the Senior Center at Alto Street.
That's this Thursday.
This coming Thursday, exactly. And for those who can't make that one, we will have a subsequent, another town hall meeting at the Chavez Center on Rodeo Road on April 22nd, which is also a Thursday, 2 weeks hence. And it will be, again, the same facilitators and the same discussion. We are soliciting input from all neighborhoods and groups throughout the city. We're making the city clear, city council understand that we feel that this is serious enough, the science is in question enough, that we want to employ the precautionary principle. And also we want the public, like traditionally in Santa Fe, the public and land use department of the city has had control over the situation and have done it cooperatively together, that they determine where all the cell towers, antennas, and so forth, and what density is required, as opposed to the industry. We have found that in most areas of the city, cell phones, there's a few blank spots as we check with the emergency services. But for the most part, we have blanket coverage over the city. And the question also begs to be answered, how much do we need?
John McPhee is a safety expert for policy and programs, and he's with the Santa Fe Alliance for Public Health and Safety. Dr. David Carpenter is the director of the Institute for Health and the Environment at the University at Albany. John McPhee, is there a website and or a phone number that people can call if they want more information here in New Mexico, in Santa Fe?
They can call me at 577-8351. Yes, it is my cell phone. I leave it off most of the time, but it is I use it as an answering service, and I do call back.
I will be landline, I hope.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And yeah, we would love to give you more information, and we have can give you access to a lot of different websites.
Well, I want to thank you both so much for being with us here on the Santa Fe Radio Cafe.
Well, it was a pleasure talking with you both. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're streaming live on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org. Thanks to Santa Fe's Dotfoil Computer Services. That means you can go to santafe.radiocafe.org anytime you like and hear the show if you didn't hear it in the morning. You can find us at facebook.com/radiocafe, and my email address is radiocafe@ksfr.org. Thanks to Marilyn LeBlanc for engineering today. Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team, and after that, jazz.